begins way back in the year 1066 with William, the Duke of Normandy. He was better known as William the Conqueror. He defeated the Anglo-Saxons with Harold at the Battle of Hastings. William, who went on to be crowned King William I of England on Christmas Day of that year. But he had to continue to fight his newly conquered subjects as he did not take too kindly to Norman domination. William, he looked for a site to build a prince and overawe the citizens of London. He chose that site just inside the Eastern City Wall, where once a Roman fort had stood. And it was here, in 1078, that he ordered the construction of his first royal palace and fortress to be built in England. We refer to today as the White Tower, and it's situated behind those rooftops there. There's no point in looking, because it's behind! And have a much better view a bit later in the tour. Over the next 200 years, successive monarchs then continues to add to the defences of the tower. The inner wall has got 13 smaller towers, and that's completed around 1220. The outer wall, completed in 1280, has got a further 6 towers all to the south to defend against an attack coming up the River Thames. So the north end of this wall is really not massive. On this wall here, we've got legs now. On the other wall, we've got brass now. Now, they would have had cannons situated inside of them on top to defend against an attack coming from that direction. The third line of defence, you're now stood in it. This was once a moat or a ditch filled with water, goes all the way around the tower. Built during the reign of King Edward I, brought in an equerry from Holland, a master water. It's 120 feet wide, and when fully excavated, 15 feet deeper than you can see here today. Now, this was designed to use the tidal flow of the River Thames. Twice a day, the River Thames would flow into and around the moat to keep it clean. And this system did seem to work really well at first, but all the rubbish and excrement directed it from Shoreditch, Houndsditch, and the tower itself soon made this moat the largest cesspit in London and a source of pestilence to anyone that lived nearby. But that's not a problem, now. It's only stayed like that for 500 years until in 1843. The Duke of Wellington, he got permission from Queen Victoria to get the moat drained. He then had it filled in the sand and shingle to the height you see out here today. He then put this to good use as an exercise area and a parade ground for the troops based there in the town. As I said earlier, this was the first royal palace and fortress to be built in England, and the White Tower has been used for many things over the years. This was a royal residence right up until 1603. The last reigning monarch to reside here was King James I. Since 1303, the Crown Jewels and Royal Regalia have been safely stored in the battlements of this mighty fortress. Being a fortress, its main role was an armoury for the storage of warlike stores and provisions. This was the site of the first royal observatory for the study of stars and planets, and so that was moved down to Greenwich in the 17th century. All documents and papers of the monarch's court, they were held here in the tower until moved in the middle of the 19th century to form the public records office. This was a royal menagerie, the first zoo in London, home to some weird and wonderful creatures here. We had lions, we had tigers, we had a polar bear, we had a big pack of monkeys, we even had an elephant here in the tower. But we were rubbish and looking after animals. When we got this elephant, for instance, they asked what it was. We have no idea. They said, what does he do to it? We've got no clue at all. He said, where'd you get it? He said, it's a royal gift. We went, oh, it's a royal elephant. Now, at that time, in the medieval period, the monks were so putrid that royalty would drink beer, wine, and eat cake. Somebody fell in a royal elephant cake for a wine, and he died. But I'm led to believe he died really quite happy that morning. In 1835, the Duke of Wellington, he got the animal shifted up to Regent's Park, and that's best known today as London Zoo. Last but no least, this must rank as one of the most famous prison complexes in the world. Talking of prisoners, to police around, see that tall white building on the top up there, the statues in it? Now that tall white building up there stands in front of an area known as Trinity Square Gardens. And Trinity Square Gardens, that stands up on Tower Hill. Now Tower Hill, that was the site of many executions up there between the 14th and the 18th century. King Edward IV, he had a permanent scaffold erected up there in 1465. Much to the concern to the citizens of London. Over 75 men of noble birth were to be executed up there on Tower Hill on these blockades. The first victim, in 1381, that was a man named Simon Sudbury, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Now he was dragged up there by the presence of London and he was executed for daring to introduce a poll tax. 7 years later, in 1388, the first legal execution took place up there on Tower Hill. Now that was also a Simon, that's a Simon the Burning. And the last victim in 1747, was another Simon, Simon Fraser, the Lord Lovett. So if your name was Simon around these times, people tend to keep that a little bit secret. my little pause and imagine you see that we're like up there on Tower Hill on the day of election. Literally thousands of people to gather around the race platform up there to witness the proceedings. After delivering his final speech and saying his prayers, the prisoner then kneeled at his death on the block. Given the word of signal, the executioner would bring down his axe, hopefully beheading his victim with one single stroke. The executioner would hold up the severed extremity of the head, turn into the assembled crowd of flame. Behold the head of a traitor. So die all traitors. God save the king and the crowd of roar.
Oh, hey,
I built that right up for all of you then, not just this young lady at the front. Well, let's try that one more time. I don't want any traitors amongst us here this afternoon. The execution hold up the seven and still moving head. Turn into the assembled plan and flame. Behold the head of the traitor. So die all traitors. God save the king.
God save the king.
The head then being impaled into a soldier's pipe carried through to London, down towards London Bridge. In those days, that was the only crossing over the River Thames. The head would then be displayed above the entrance to the city as a sign of fate awaiting the beaten traitors. Meanwhile, the head was caught, so we taken down, thrown into a handcart, brought back into the tower, where we quickly buried in an unmarked grave in the chapel wall of St. Peter the Vicular. You can all visit that and then it will be right, just like the head's corpse, now return our attention back to the tower. Very shortly, going to go up that slope, turn left, and going to walk between these two round towers here behind me. Now that's the Bible Tower. The Bible Tower to rise to stand for by the Lord and by the Word. Because every day here in South London at 3 p.m, the sermon of the Word takes place. There are a secret parcel that's interesting though, and it's gained entry into the tower after midnight. The furthest big round tower that you see there with the window in the centre of it, now that was where the Yeoman Warder Watchman stays. Now that building was completed around 1280. It's had a Yeoman Warder on watch in that room every single night since the year 1280. That is one of the oldest manned guard rooms in the world. As we walk between those surround towers, we're going to go under an archway. As we do the cupping, we'll see the spikes of the portcullis and all the drop gate. Now, this one dates back to 1326. It weighs 1.5 tons. It's one of two surviving portcullises we have here in the tower, and I'll show you that one a bit later on. But don't hang around underneath this one, because the rope holding it up also dates back to 1326. There's also three holes running to the stonework. Now, these are called murder holes. Probably be used by the defenders of those two towers to pour boiling water onto would-be attackers if they tried to get in. Another use for those three holes is to pour their waste buckets in the morning into a car as they pass through the arch. Right, we're ready to carry on?
Yes!